So we're in the middle of the second pasuk, and the second pasuk describes some of the. This is really the pasuk that describes the slavery, the bondage. You remember the first pasuk describes the descent, Aramil Vidavi, Verad Mitzrayma. Second pasuk is Vayareu Osanu HaMitzrim, Vayanunu, Vaydnu Alina Vodakasha. We spoke a little bit about Vayareu Osanu earlier in the week, and I spoke a little bit about Vayanunu, but I want to circle back to the Vayanunu. The word Vayanunu is an interesting phrase, Vayanunu, and the Baal Haggadah, the person that compiled the Haggadah, at least this part of the Haggadah, associated it with the Pasuk in Shmos. So we're going to focus on the Pasuk in Shmos, which has one word that's similar. We'll talk about that word that's similar to Vayanunu, but there's other information, there's other details in this Pasuk in Shmos. How does the Baal Haggadah interpret the Pasuk in Shmos in Kisevo Vayanunu? This Pasuk in Shmos, very beginning, Parak Aleph, Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayasimu Olav Sere Misim, Laman Anoto, and also Besivlotam, but even Ari Miskin El Saparo, Espisam Vyasram says. So because in Parshas Kitava Vayanuno and in Parshas Shmos Laman Anoso, so that's what the reference is in Kisavo, but we're going to shift now to the Pasuk in Shmos and try to dissect the Pasuk. So let's start one by one. Let's first start with the word Anoso, Vayanunu Anoso. In Kisavo, it sounds like they tortured us. Milashon Inui, to torture, to persecute, to psychologically torture, to physically torture. In Parsha Shmos, it sounds like that was the purpose, Laman Anoso. See the difference between Vayanunu? Vayanunu is a result. As a result of our labor, we were tortured. But in Parsha Shmos, it's Laman Anoso. That was the entire purpose. Which just shows the pathology of hatred and anti-Semitism. That their major purpose was not to advance the Egyptian economy, not even to advance the pyramids. Again, it's historically unclear whether the Jews actually built the pyramids. We'll talk a little bit later. They were clearly involved in the construction industry. But the entire purpose was to torture the Jewish people. And you see how psychopathic hatred is and how psychopathic anti-Semitism is. And I talked about this a couple of weeks ago with Lavan and Aram Yovid Avi, that Lavan wanted to kill his own daughters and he wanted to murder his own grandchildren, and that Paro could care less at his own Bechor was on the crosshairs of Makkas Bukharos, even though Paro's son pleaded with him, and that Hitler Yimach Shemo rerouted so many resources and personnel and time and interest to go chase down Jews when he was fighting a war on two fronts. And you see the hatred that the Arabs have for us. They're willing to put tens of thousands of civilians in danger just to rally public opinion against us, just to try to turn this asymmetrical war against us. So you see how psychopathic hatred could become, that their primary purpose, instead of advancing their empire, was a man on the sub-civilization. Okay? Now, another interesting word in this pasuk, which highlights part of what happened in Mitzrayim, and everything that happens in Mitzrayim happens again through Jewish history, because Jewish history is cyclical and anti-Semitism is cyclical. So these are carve-outs, historical carve-outs that happen again and again in history, is this phrase, Vayasimu Olav, Sarei Misim. What do you mean, Vayasimu Olav? Who's the Olav? It should be Vayasimu Alehem, on the Jewish people. What is Vayasimu Olav? So Chazal darshan, that this is the way they trapped the Jewish people. Everyone started working on these public works, and there's probably construction, as we'll see in a moment. And you know who was the first to show up to work that day? Paro. And Paro put on some symbolic plate on his chest, some rectangular plate that resembled a brick. And he said, you see, I'm working also, so you guys should work. And that's how they K-holed the Jews into working. Paro showed up. Yasimu Olav. They put a little brick on Paro's chest. If Paro's working, everyone should be working. Now, what is this? This is just a trick. This is just a scheme to get them to work. Oh, you see, Paro's working. It's like a lumdish scheme to get them to work. I think there's something much deeper here. As Jews, part of our experience in exile is that we don't want to be marginalized, and we don't want to be a fifth wheel, and we don't want to be enemies of the state, and we don't want to be refugees. When we join host cultures, we want to be part of the culture, and we're patriots, and we want to contribute to the culture. And there's always a thin line between our cultural insularity and how much we keep to ourselves, and our patriotism and our engagement with society around us. And that's an ideological challenge, not to become too embedded in the culture. And through certain times in history, we became too embedded in the local culture. But just the same, throughout history, very often our desire to be part of the culture and our patriotic feelings, because we want to daven for the Shalom HaMedina. Remember, I was in, I forget where I was, I think maybe in Georgia a couple of years ago. And Georgia used to be under the command, or under the dominance of the Soviet Empire. And I actually saw, which I think is pretty prevalent, but for us it'd be very jarring. I saw there were Russian siddurim in one of the shuls I was in, because it holdovers from the Soviet Empire. And the Soviet Empire, Soviet era siddurim, had tefillah l'shalom hamedina. And they were davening for the communists. They were davening on behalf. And it's not just a deviant example. It's not just an exceptional moment. There were Jews who davened for the welfare of the Nazi state. There were Jews who davened for the welfare of the papal states in Italy. So Jews have a natural inclination to want to be part of their society, and we want to support law and order, and we want to support good governance, and we want to be patriots. And sometimes it's turned against us. And you say, well, if you're really patriotic, then you have to be involved in these aspects of the state, and then slowly but surely we get drawn in. And as we get drawn in, well, these legislations are good for you, and it's good for the state, and therefore you should give up some of your freedom and give up some of your rights on behalf of the welfare of the state in general. As strange as it sounds, it happened in Germany, where in World War I there were a lot of Jews who were World War I heroes. They fought on behalf and died on behalf of Germany in World War I, and it created an air of patriotism, not just World War I, it was a manifestation. And some of the original Nazi decrees that were presented as if it's good for the welfare of the German state and the German people, that the Jews should be curtailed and the Jews should be legislated against, it's hard to know, but we were a little bit hoodwinked. And we thought, well, if it's good for the general Nazi state, maybe we should allow our freedoms to be limited. I mean, maybe we should allow some of these laws to be enacted. And you first start to see this in Mitzrayim. It's good for the state of Egypt that you work in construction. And maybe the first couple of days, the first couple of weeks, they were just contractors, and they got lunch breaks, and they got days off, and there were rights, and they unionized, and they had labor unions. And then slowly but surely, they started to become slaves. But the way they were drawn in is they were duped because of their natural feelings of patriotism. If Pharaoh was working, then you should be working. And you see this a little bit later in the Pasuk, where they built Are Miskinos. That word Are Miskinos is not clear. What does it mean, Are Miskinos? So there are many, many different interpretations. The Gemara talks about it in Sota. But one interpretation of Are Miskinos is they were actually building not pyramids for cultural symbols or for palace or for, you know, crypts of kings. They're actually building storehouses. And why were they building storehouses? Because they were told, this is your field. Your great-great-grandfather Yosef, he was the person who first requisitioned storehouses, and the Egyptian economy depends upon storing up food, because there are going to be years of plenty, of abundance, there are going to be years of starvation. So we have to continue to store food, and this is your contribution to Egyptian society. This is always your contribution to Egyptian society. So they started to build these storehouses for the good of Egypt, because we're good patriotic Jews, we're Egyptian Jews. We live for the improvement of the Egyptian economy. This has always been our legacy. If we look back to Yosef, this is how we got started in Egypt. And slowly but surely, they were drawn into the slave labor, and they didn't realize it. So sometimes our patriotism is turned against us. We want the states that we're a part of to advance and to improve. We want to enhance. Sometimes we're manipulated because of our patriotism. And I think we have to be careful. I think today, at least in the United States of America, that could be an issue down the line, where people are so patriotic about their country, because American Jews are really patriotic about the country. South African Jews are not. It's clear. Australian Jews, not so much patriotism in Australia to begin with. But American Jews, Thanksgiving, and apple pie, and doubleheader baseball games, and right now, for the last 200 years, that patriotism of the United States of America has been consistent with Jewish values, and to a degree with Israeli needs. They've dovetailed, so it's been great to be an American patriot. What will happen when those two agendas deviate or diverge? I don't know. You have to be careful that it doesn't turn into anti-Semitism. And that's how they were drawn in. Vayasimu olav serem misim lemanan oso. And we don't have enough time. This is the last show. I'll continue this year, Mitzvah Hashem, by myself, so you can listen to them online. I just want to point out one issue, and maybe I'll elaborate about it in further shiur. What type of work did the Jews actually perform? It's not really clear. The one word we have is besivlosam. Now, sivlosam is a double entendre. The man anoso besivlosam in Shemos. Sivlosam can mean sevel, torture, suffering, hardship. It can mean Avodah Zarah. There's a pasuk in Tanakh that associates Seva with Avodah Zarah. Why exactly Avodah Zarah is called a heavy weight? Not for now. But the simple shot of Sivlosam is to carry heavy weight on your back. And because they were carrying heavy weight on the back, they were probably involved in construction. Again, there's a lot of historical research about whether the Jews actually built the pyramids or not, but even if it wasn't pyramid building, it was building irrigation ditches. Egypt needs a lot of irrigation, waterways, and mechanisms to try to draw the water from the Nile. It was building the empire. And it's very, very neat to say the Jews built the pyramids, because we see the pyramids, and they're visible, and there are signs of Egypt, and it's not clear that the two historical eras dovetail or overlap. But they were involved in construction. And construction is very, very hard labor. I worked in construction one summer. It's a heavyweight. It's the worst form. It's the hardest form of slave labor. You're basically using men and human beings as animals to carry from place to place. Right? If you work in the field, so you're cutting. Basically, every other form of work is a skill. Even rowing is a skill. But here, you're just essentially bearing weight. You're using the human body just to bear it. Mitch, you'll see when you're in the army. Now, to carry 30 kilo on your back while you're involved in a bachmas or something, it's hard. Okay, there you're just trying to improve your skills and your strength. Here you're doing it every day, all day, carrying from place to place. And that's why kinim was so important. I'll just stick in a little word for kinim, because kinim, don't fall into these lazy definitions. Kinim is not lice. You had lice when you were in Gan and your mother kept you home. Kinim is a vermin infestation. Every time they drew up some ground, some dirt, it was full with mice and rodents and rabbits and jackrabbits and weasels, and there was a vermin that just came. And the two industries that were most affected by kinim were the agricultural industry. They could no longer plant, which hurt the Egyptian breadbasket. The irony, Egypt had fed the entire world in Sefer Bereishis, and now they couldn't even feed themselves because the agricultural industry had shut down during Dam, and now it's completely shut down during kinim. But the second industry that was shut down and affected by kinim was the construction industry, because you have to build foundations. And if every time you ever see an ant hole and how the dirt is unsettled and weakened, so every time you dig and you want to build a foundation, vermin come and fill up that spot. You can't build anything. And that's why Chazal say the Jews started to be liberated in kinim. Kinim is when the Jews started to have it, take it easy and not work that hard. They began to be emancipated simply because the construction industry that there was slave labor to shut down. Now, why am I discussing this? Obviously, because it speaks to how hard we worked and it speaks to how much suffering we endured. But it also speaks to the broader messages of Pesach. And if you want to, I strongly recommend, if you know how to read English and you want to improve your English, read Rabbi Sachs's Haggadah. A, because his English is very poetic and very elegant, and because he generalizes and universalizes Pesach. I think he generalized it too much. I don't know if that was his intention. But he helped us see how Pesach is part of a larger narrative of humanity, of democracy, of political freedom, of equality, of not abusing human rights. I have a shiur that I recorded, which I tried to push back a little bit and create a balance, where I said I think that he felt that Yetzias Mitzrayim was a revolution. I feel it was a revelation. You hear the difference? A revolution is a larger political process of revolution. A revelation is Hashem came to us and said, be my people. And it's a little bit of both. It's a revolution and a revelation, and you have to try to merge the two. But what you're seeing is you're seeing slave labor in its worst form. Namely, why was slave labor so necessary? I'm not justifying it morally. But in ancient times, why was slave labor so necessary? Because it didn't have the technology to create progress and to advance the human condition without massive labor. So, for example, if we look at transportation, today, if you want to get across the ocean, you're essentially using fuel technology, combustion technology. You're burning gas, whatever, oil, and that oil is releasing energy, and that energy is propelling the plane forward. If you want to get across the ocean, I don't know, 2,000 years ago, you had to capture, I don't know, 200 slaves and have them row you across the ocean with these long rows. So as humanity advances and progresses, there's less need for slave labor because we have the skills and the tools to accomplish human tasks without massive, massive human effort and human labor. And the area which needs the most labor and is the most abusive because it needs the most labor is construction. because construction requires moving a lot of heavy material, because you don't want to use plastic to build your house. You're using stone, you're using cement, you're using earth, you're using dirt, you're using... I worked in construction, and you build with heavy material, and you're moving it to high positions because you want to build multi-story areas. So inherent to construction is a massive, massive demand for slave labor and to use human beings, not as human beings, but basically like animals to carry. And, you know, you can use animals as well, but animals aren't intelligent, so you can't tell them where to go. You can tell human beings, I want you to move those 500 bricks from this place to that place in the next week. And they'll be able to put the two together and connect the dots. Animals have to be led by human beings. So the fact that we were subjected to slave labor in Egypt for construction highlighted slave labor in its worst, worst form in humanity. And as humanity evolved, it was able to evolve beyond slavery. Baruch Hashem, today, we don't really have, at least in the classic sense, we don't really have slavery. We've escaped the curse of slavery, and we've escaped the curse of slavery by developing the technology. So what you're seeing is not just a Jewish story, you're seeing a human story. The subjugation of the Jewish people in Mitzrayim to slave labor, the modern Asab B'Sivul Asam, demonstrates the horrific, horrific effects of slave labor. And unfortunately, humanity needed it. Now, I'm not justifying it morally, but humanity needed it. And to fill that need, it exploited other slaves. And Baruch Hashem, we've moved beyond. Now, of course, the modern form of slavery, just to show you how broken our culture is, the modern form of slavery, once humanity moved past slavery, let's say in 1400, 1500, people, they're still slaves, but it wasn't as popular. But all of a sudden, colonialism set in. Let's not enslave individuals, let's enslave entire countries and take over their resources. And that's why it's so odious, and that's why it's being used today, weaponized against the state of Israel, that we're colonialist nations, which of course we're not, but at least it's such an odious and hateful form of abuse of other nations. It's not enslaving a person, it's enslaving a nation and taking that nation to serve your needs and to just create opulence and ostentation in Mother Europe. Okay, so then we get through the whole Pasuk, but read these Pesukim carefully. If you have some time before Pesach, really focus on Tzeilamad. That's where the story of the Yetzias Mitzrayim happens. Read through Chazal, read through the Medrash. Take your time to learn these four Pesukim and read Chazal, deconstruct them, and decipher them. Okay? Chag Kasher v'Sameach, everyone. And Mirat Hashem, after Yom Tov, we'll learn Pirkei Avos every day. Every day we'll learn a different mission in Pirkei Avos, and aside from the Sfas Emes and Rashi. Okay, have a great, great Pesach, everyone. Thanks.